So I used to think whether I should take that bus or in the same bus stop I take another bus, go to Bhopal and go to Chennai. Because these people I can't manage. Hindi is difficult. It made me cry. You know, every day I used to think whether to go to the office or I must go to Chennai.
Hey guys, welcome to Two Suitcases. This is a show where we unpack immigration stories and explore complex topics that transcend borders and culture. I am Bharat Madras Natarajan.
And I am Raksha Rajagopalan. This is the second episode in our mini-series where we dig deep to better understand our personal and family immigration stories. Today, we talk to my dad, Rajagopalan Srinivasan, about his story. I've always wanted to know about his journey, and it was exciting to pick his brain as he reflects on his childhood in Chennai, the various factors in his decision to move from one place to the next, seeking the next big adventure. A lifelong adventure taking him from Chennai to Indore, Kinshasa, Dar es Salaam, and finally Lusaka. Join us in unpacking this intimate family story, a story that some of you will hopefully resonate with. So thank you, Appa, for joining our podcast. We're very excited to have you. So more than just knowing about your immigration story, we felt that this is a good way to document things that we've never really asked you before, or I don't really know your full story sometimes. So very excited that you're here. So I want to know a little bit about your background. So where were you born and how was your life in India?
I was born in Madurai. In Tamil Nadu. That was in 1961. After that, I grew up in now what we call Chennai. It used to be called Madras before. So I grew up there, did my schooling and everything. So I used to go to Madurai very frequently because that was my hometown. My grandmom, my uncles, maternal uncles, everybody lived there. So I used to visit there like 3 or 4 times every year while I was in the school. So that was my second home.
Why did your family move to Chennai? I'm guessing this was just your parents and your siblings.
Yeah, my parents lived in Chennai because my father was working for railways in India.
How was it growing up in Chennai? What are some of your fondest memories from your childhood?
In Chennai, I did my schooling and everything. All my friends were there and so on. It was a really nice place, though it was hot during summer. It's never cold there.
Yeah.
But we got used to it. Sweating and everything is all part of the life. I had a lot of friends, and it was like a confined environment in the sense that our houses were not really exposed to heavy traffic and other things because it's like a colony, we call it, you know. So a lot of houses are there, small roads, so there is very less traffic on the roads. So we used to play cricket on the road also if we need, and there are grounds where we used to play. And I used to play ball badminton.
Yeah.
It was fun, you know, a lot of friends and so many things happening. All the relatives were around, so visiting them is a fun.
Yeah.
So otherwise, Madras is my like very favorite place. I used to walk all over the place. Walking is not at all a problem. I go from ICF to Mylapore, Mambalam, walking. Me and my cousin and all that, we used to walk.
Did you end up finishing high school and going to college in Madras itself, or did you move out?
Yeah, I did that in Madras itself.
Okay. So when did you eventually move out of Madras?
That was around 21 years after my birth.
Okay.
So I moved to a place called Indore in Madhya Pradesh.
Okay. How did you have to move to Indore?
That's another good story. You know what happened? I'm not at all good at studies. I'm an average or above average. In India, you know, if you're not in the top 5, you're not considered as good.
Mm.
So then what happened is I was studying in the college. So other people used to discuss what they are doing about their career and things like that. So I used to just be a silent listener because I have nothing to contribute because they may not take me seriously because they're all top 5, 10 in the class, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they are talking, right? So one time it just happened like they were discussing about this management trainee program in Tata Exports. Tata Exports is a prestigious institution in India where they employ a lot of people. And, you know, it is not easy to get employment there. They take the top people and so on. That is a mindset, basically.
Right.
So in my case, it just so happened I have also applied for the same position, not knowing others will also apply. So all these guys are discussing, oh, I did this, I did that, I put my application like this, that, what. I was quiet. I didn't even say that I also applied. I'm also one of those guys.
Yeah.
But finally, I got the interview call. And that interview was very interesting. Mm. There were like three guys sitting and interviewing people. So I got selected. And there were funny questions. Huh? You won't believe. It was all tricky. Very interesting. So I got through. So when I came back home, my father asked me, what did they ask you in the interview?
Yeah.
So I just repeated. These are the questions. What did you say? I also answered what I told. Then he said, you got the job.
Yeah.
Don't even worry. I think they will offer you. I said, okay, fine. So when I went back and I was talking to my friends, they all said, no, we all applied and no interview call yet. I'm waiting and things like that. So I didn't tell them I even attended the interview. I kept quiet. Then later on, I got the real offer.
Did you know when you were interviewing for the job that it was going to be outside of Chennai?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. They mentioned about that place is in Madhya Pradesh. It's called Devas. It's in a developing area. You know, it's not really a town or a big city or anything like that. Because it is a big industry. So it's an industry and they put it up there.
Were you feeling any sense of hesitancy to leave Chennai and go to this random rural place away from your family? Or do you feel like at 21, you're almost ready to do that and kind of get some independence away from your parents and away from home?
See, I'm an adventurous guy. I like to travel and I have been traveling all my life, you know, going to different places alone most of the time, like, you know, Madurai and other places. So I have the experience of doing it. That is one side of the story. Mm-hmm. The second part of the story is also, I thought, you know, getting an opportunity like this is not going to happen for everybody. And, you know, the kind of an opportunity knocks at you, you need to make use of it. Mm-hmm. If you miss it, maybe it'll be different.
Yeah.
So I thought I'll take a chance, I'll go. So even my father was asking me whether you're comfortable. You know, you don't know the language, number one. You know, you only know Tamil and you can speak English. But there it is Hindi. It's a Hindi concentrated area, belt.
Right.
So he asked me whether you'll be comfortable with the language. I said, no, I'll manage somehow.
Yeah.
So yeah. I went.
How was life like in Madhya Pradesh?
Yeah, the place I lived was called Indore. It's a quiet place. It's a small town. The people were talking, majority of people were only talking in Hindi, which is very foreign to me. I don't even know. I can't read, write, or speak. I only know one or two few words, you know, to say the least.
Yeah.
So initially, it was all okay. When I went as a management trainee, the group with whom I was associated, all those people can speak in English because they're all from university. And then we were also interacting, you know, as a management trainee, we are moving from one department to another department and so on. So we meet with people, they all speak English. So first 1 year was very nice, good time. Going there, talking to people, taking notes, sitting in the library, sleeping, having coffee, this, that, and enjoying. After 1 year, that's when the grill started. At the end of 1 year, they put us in production. Now those guys, they don't know. Even an officer or manager will be comfortable speaking in Hindi because they can't explain everything in English. Everybody will call me because they know I don't know Hindi, especially the supervisors, officers, and ask me questions. And I'm obliged to answer because I'm a manager there.
Right.
So I'm supposed to answer their questions, you know, to guide them. It is like they don't know or they want some assistance. So when this happened, what I used to do, very simple. I will listen to that fellow. He will tell me everything. I will take it in my memory. Go to my colleague, who is also a trainee. He knows Tamil, he knows English, he knows Hindi. So I'll just go and repeat everything 100% to him. To say, this is what I heard.
Yeah.
So he has to translate it to me. Then I will tell him, this is my answer for this one.
Yeah.
He will repeat that in Hindi for me, what my answer should be. In Hindi, he will tell me. I'll just promptly go back and tell the guys, hey, this is my answer. Ah, they used to love it. You know, that's how I managed.
Yeah.
And the problem was, every day I used to think, you know, whether to go to, you know, where I was staying is called Indore. From there, this place is about 45 kilometers. You go by the company bus every day, early morning, 6:30, you have to take, and there it used to be winter also. I'm not used to the cold. So we have to go to the bus stop, take the company bus, go 45 minutes ride, go to the office there, you know. So I used to think whether I should take that bus or in the same bus stop, I take another bus, go to Bhopal and go to Chennai. Because these people I can't manage. Hindi is difficult.
Yeah.
Make me cry. You know, every day I used to think whether to go to the office or I must go to Chennai.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, it was so difficult. Yeah. But then, you know, over a period of time, I got over, like, I picked it up.
Sounds like it very, like, challenging experiences that you eventually overcame by being in a different place than home. How long were you in Indore for?
Like about 4 years.
And why did you leave after those 4 years?
I used to go to Chennai every year. Sometimes my parents come there because they also love to travel. So they came and stayed with me sometimes. So around 4 years later, I even became a director of one of the ancillary companies. So then one time when I went to Chennai, there was a funny advertisement in the newspaper. So it was very interesting. In the sense, in those days, there was no such thing called walk-in interviews. People used to advertise, you have to write to them because there was no email and things like that in those days. You can't imagine how we lived. So we have to write a letter, they will respond, then you have to take it up and so on. But this was a funny advertisement I saw in the newspaper where they asked for people to walk in for an interview. To which place? Got 4 second place at the time. Nobody knew where it was. It's called Zaire in those days. It is now known as Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC. So where is it? It's a place called Kinshasa. So I know nothing about this place. I said, okay, nothing wrong, just meeting some people to know, even if I don't take the offer. Since they are saying anybody can walk in.
Yeah.
I said, okay, let me just walk in. So I went to Adiarket Hotel. So I met the guys and they were two brothers, Indians originally. So that's why they came to choose people from India. So they said, no, we are there for a long time. And they explained about the country and all that. And, you know, you can imagine Congo means, you know, pygmies and so many other things come to your mind. Huh? I was also very surprised. I mean, people are also living there. Mm-hmm. I mean, in Africa, Africa itself is a, you know, dark continent. And then people like Indians going and living there was news to me. I don't know how it will be. So I don't know about the experience. So I asked them various questions. Instead of them asking me, I was asking them all sorts of questions about the players and how they went there and what were they doing kind of things, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then later on, they understood. I have the qualification. I have the necessary experience and they have nothing to lose. And I don't know. They saw some potential. They said, no, okay, why don't you join us? They made an offer, which was interesting. And I had no passport at that time. I was not even planning to travel anywhere. So I had no passport. I told them, look, I don't even have a passport. No, we want you to come within 1 month. I said, now how can I come even if I want to? I don't even have a passport, number one. Number two, I have to go where I'm working. I have to give them a month's notice to go resign and leave the job. I can't walk out just like that since you offered me something. You may have to give me the chance to hand over everything and then I can walk out. So then they said, no, okay, what it takes for you to do it? I said, no, I have to pay some extra money and I have to travel. I have to go by air. You know, you want me to resign, so I have to go there now. If I send my resignation letter, it will take even 1 month for them to receive and then respond and all those things. So I just put in conditions, you know, without knowing what I'm doing.
Right.
And they agreed to everything. So they gave me everything. They gave me money for flying. They gave me money for passport, this, that, everything, all the expenses.
Was that your first time flying?
Yeah. That was from Chennai to Delhi, then Delhi to Bhopal, then from there by train kind of things, you know. It was a big, big travel place.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Yeah. What did your family have to say about this new position, new job in middle of nowhere, Zaire?
Yeah, that is a very good question indeed. that was really not very welcome. They said, no, you are going to get stuck and you don't know these guys. What if they don't treat you well? What if they don't send you away back when you want to go back to India? They say, no, we cannot send you, or they don't give you the ticket. You know, you don't have anything to do in that place. And if those people are not good, and for some reason they want to hold you there like ransom, you know, we hear stories in Dubai and other places where the employees are treated badly, and then they have to go to the embassy to get, assistance to get back to the country and so on. So what, you know, this is at least Dubai and other places are nearby. Right. But Africa and also Zaire, you need to take 2 flights to go there, 3 flights to go there and all that. How will you do it? Then incidentally that it happens, like, you know, we were like 3-4 of us went together from Chennai. So then that gave us like a comfort with each other, you know, like, oh, you're not alone.
Yeah.
And we're all going from Chennai to the same company. So that makes some sense, right? So they took all the bunch of people, like 4 of us to go together.
You know, before you take us to you moving to Zaire, I was wondering, so were you unhappy with your job at Tata, or did you just want a new adventure? What was your thought process?
Like I told you earlier, I was looking for adventure, nothing more than that. So anything takes. I don't care what it is. Let me go and see. At the most, what can happen? They can hold me or something, but I know I can easily come out of it. I had my, what you call, confidence.
Yeah.
So I never thought about negative of anything. You know, I said, no, let me just go for the sake of it. Adventure. No, that's all.
Yeah.
And when I resigned also, they were surprised. You know, you are a director now and you are resigning. You just became a director like 1 year ago. What is wrong? Is it the salary? They wanted to negotiate.
Mm.
Then I said, no, it is nothing like that. But I just want to go for a different assignment, see different people, different culture. I'll even come back. If I don't like it, I can, oh, no problem. No, you go. But I'm sure within 3 months, you are going to say, take back your resignation, join back or something like that.
Yeah.
They gave me the open offer, you know.
Yeah.
So only from our family side, yes, they were having their own apprehensions. They thought, you know, I'm taking a big chance and going somewhere where nobody would like to go to test waters.
What were some of your expectations of, you know, either just what life would be like, but also of like particular challenges that you kind of are almost sure that you eventually face by moving? What are some of those expectations before you moved to Zaire?
Yeah, before I moved, I expected that being Indian owners, they should be treating the people nicely and I should not have any misgivings, you know, other than what they have told me, should be all followed through. So they should not cheat. Mm-hmm. And I should not be taken for a ride, you know. That was the first point.
Yeah.
Second point is they said, no, when you come there, you will not feel uncomfortable and all those things. Otherwise, I didn't have any much apprehension because I knew that there are another 3-4 guys are coming. So at the most, what can happen? We will manage it.
How did you convince your parents?
Nothing much to convince.
You made your decision.
Yeah, I made my decision. I just told them, look, I just want to go. They said, okay, it's up to you.
Yeah. Tell us what your thoughts were when you first landed. What were your first impressions of the place? What were some of the experiences in the first few days and few weeks of having just landed?
Wow. Kinshasa was a big city. I didn't expect it in the first place. Mm. It was huge. When I landed at the airport, I expected a big airport, but no, it was not that big, but it was okay. When we came out, the city was huge in the sense that, you know, the roads were nice and the buildings were tall, big, unlike in India, you know, what I've seen in Chennai, only one LIC, which is 12 floors, one building at that time. There were not many other tall buildings, you know, there are others on two-story or three-story or something like that. But here I found multiple 12 stories, 18 stories and other things, even at that time. That was another pleasant surprise. I thought Africa should be, you know, something else. There will be no proper roads, like bullock carts, or I don't know what to expect and all those things. And donkeys pulling a cart or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, nothing like that. It was a pleasant surprise. Because for a backward country like that, you expect something more worse than where you come from. So it was not like that in those terms. So they took us to the place where the company located. It is about 40 minutes drive from the airport. And then, you know, what they have done is they had the factory, everything in the same place where they have the residential area. So only it is separated. So the residential area, they gave me a house. You know, I was surprised. I had a 3-bedroom house to myself, which I never had. You know, earlier I was paying rent and this one is free.
Yeah.
And there was a car parked outside for me. It was a Hyundai Pony. They call it Pony those days. Hatchback.
Yeah.
Oh, thrill. But only that I don't know how to drive. I went with a license from India. So I arrived there and then they showed me the house and there was a servant available. That man came to greet me, you know, very politely and all that. Wow. And we had some colleagues, you know, Portuguese and some Italians and all that working there. So it was like a multicultural and we are all living in the same area. Each one had our own houses to ourselves, you know. It was very pleasant and nice. Oh, again, language was a very, very big challenge because that place is French. I know nothing, not even one word of French at that time. So now it starts again, another journey, learning the language. So what they did, they put one guy to teach us French language from the company itself. So that fellow was working in the factory. When he comes in the evening to teach us, he will call himself, I'm Professor Mulumba. Instead of being called a worker, you know, Mulumba, I will say, I'm Professor Mulumba. So we have to give him respect, you know,
yeah,
sir,
yeah,
and all those things. And we have to learn, read, write. So the same way, I picked up the way how I picked up Hindi, it was easy. So whenever any questions come my way, I don't understand, I go to this fellow, tell him, this is what I heard, translate. I tell him my answer, he translates, I go back and give the answers.
Yeah.
So I picked up easily. That language was also not difficult.
How long were you in Kinshasa for?
Kinshasa for 4 years.
4 years. In those 4 years, did you start to feel like you were missing your family, and did you start to feel like you're missing Chennai and home?
Yeah, definitely. Yes. I cannot hide that fact. Any given chance, I would love to travel back to India. You know, that is how it was always every day, whether to go to work or to go to India, you know, that kind of choice I have to make every day. But when I got the opportunity, okay, no, I was with that company for only about 1 year and so, months, few months. I got disappointed one time, you know, for some reason. I wouldn't like to discuss on that one.
Yeah.
So then I slept off early. Like yesterday night, I went up to sleep around 8 o'clock in the evening, you know.
Yeah.
Same, that day I was very upset. I went to sleep very early. And I told some of my friends, you know, in that place and outside, our community people, that I'm not happy here and things like that earlier.
Yeah.
So one guy came around 9 o'clock or something, and he was looking for me, and he couldn't find me. So he came to the bedroom to knock on my window. So I got up. I went to see him. He said, no, I came to ask you if you're interested to join our company.
Oh, wow.
I said, yeah, no problem. So then immediately he took me to his boss next day, and we agreed and everything. But these fellows were very unhappy to let me go. But then I had to tell them some story to go back to India. Then I come back to this other company.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what happened. That is my immigration problem. A small one, but it was not very. And then I met the other owners sometime in the road, another time at their place itself. Then we became friends. They understood. So it was a very pleasant transition. And I was with those other people for about 3 years, 2.5, 3 years.
Okay. Why did you end up moving out of Kinshasa then? What was the next stage of your life?
Wow. So I was with these guys, and this company was owned by some Lebanese. So it's a very big plastic factory and all that. So there, when I was with them, then one gentleman came from Singapore, one Chinese guy. He came and he was talking to me, and he said, no, why don't you join us in Dar es Salaam? We have some operation in Tanzania. I was hesitant, you know. I said, no, I'm happy here. Why should I just move? I'm okay. There is no need and all that. Then he threw some extra money and other things. He said, no, these other things are there and what, all those things. I said, okay, let me go. You know, again, the same adventure spirit in me said, let me just try it out. So I always take chances.
Yeah.
So it was one other chance I took on my life. I said, okay, let me just go because I'm just a bachelor. What is there to lose? And he says that is English-speaking place and some beaches there and a different atmosphere. So, and different, actually, it is a different business altogether.
Okay.
So now, I said, okay, fine. I agreed. I went back to India, packed my things. And in between, I went once. He told me, you come there and see the place before you go to join the work. On your way, go to see Dar es Salaam, what it is and so on. Then make a call. So I took leave from this company. I passed there. Everything was good. Then I went home, packed, went there.
What were your impressions of Dar es Salaam and how different it was from Kinshasa?
Dar es Salaam is a different story altogether. In the sense, I didn't go alone. I went with my wife. I got married.
So you went back to India, got married, and then
got married,
moved to Dar es Salaam.
Then we went to that side.
Okay. Okay.
I didn't know this.
Before jumping to the Dar es Salaam story, then tell us how meeting Auntie was, how that situation happened, how you got married to her.
It was just a coincidence. What happened in my life was another adventure. I didn't know what I'm doing, and I got into it. It just so happened, you know, I used to talk to my parents every week on the weekends. So one of the weekends I was just talking to them. Then they said, why don't you get married? I said, oh, okay. This is what you are thinking. I never thought about it. So be it. So those days, you know, we only used to getting arranged marriage. And I had no visibility in the place where I lived. There was no other girls. You know, they're all work. I mean, women were already married and so on. Only come there, you know.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, fine. Then they started looking for some girls. I think they saw two. Then they said, no, what about this particular girl? We like her. I said, okay. So if you like her, I'm game.
Okay.
You know, my spirit is something different. You won't believe. I just took a chance. I said, okay, fine. You guys are saying it's fine.
Yeah.
So if you are thinking my interest, I must be okay with that decision. So that's when they said, no, okay, we'll try to get the picture. I mean, photograph. At least you must see who you are going to get married to. Then came the picture after 2-3 weeks. You know, that has to come by post.
Yeah.
So it takes its own time.
Yeah.
And those days, what we do is either by post or, you know, I will tell them that somebody is arriving there and that man is leaving from there. They will give the letters, you know, the messages, some food items and what.
Yeah.
So they gave it to somebody, I think. Somebody brought that photograph. I looked at it. I was so impressed.
Yeah.
I said, this must be my other life and I must live with her.
Wow.
So all those things put in place. Then I had another question. Now that you have sent me the picture, what if I have to speak to her? Is it possible? You know, those days, this question is very, very difficult to ask. I took the bit of a courage, you know, to ask my parents. Then they said, oh, okay, is that what you want? We can give an excuse to you because you are in the other continent. And so we can ask the parents whether they agree. Lucky enough, they agreed. So this, you know, it takes process. Huh? I have to ask them one weekend. Then the next weekend is when they can tell me. Then they have to make an appointment with the parents and the other girl and other things. So the other week only I got the opportunity. I couldn't sleep for like 2-3 weeks, you know, waiting to hear the voice, who this person is.
Wow.
Yeah.
So finally, they agreed. So when I called, she spoke to me for a few minutes and then she was a bit shy, I think. So it lasted very few minutes, the conversation. So that is how it ended. After that, we were exchanging letters. You know, we were sending letters.
So then how soon after you got married in Chennai did you move to Dar es Salaam? Was it basically like, okay, we're getting married and then the week after we're moving?
No, in about 1 month.
Okay.
In about a month, we left from there. And for both of us, it is a new place. Though I visited that place once, we arrived there after 1 month.
Okay. How is it arriving now on African soil in Dar es Salaam as a family man with a wife with different kinds of responsibilities and expectations of life?
You know, Dar es Salaam is totally different from Kinshasa. This place is a bit chaos in terms of traffic. The moment I arrived, airport is small as expected, but then outside was hot like Chennai. Then the traffic was killing. You know, the traffic moves slowly. It's same like India.
Yeah.
And the people, a lot of Indians.
Okay.
Yeah, for a change. Because in Kinshasa, it's very hard to find Indians.
Okay.
Very rare. You know, you find, I mean, that frequently you won't find them on the road and others. But in Dar es Salaam, you don't find many local people, then a lot of Indians, because they were there all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a very different experience. And then we went home. It was a big mansion again. They gave us a two-story independent bungalow. And we are the two only, all alone. And there was a dog there. And grown-up Alsatian dog was there. So that is the kind of house they gave us. I was surprised. And they gave me a big vehicle, a Nissan Patrol at that time. A Land Cruiser.
Yeah.
I was not expecting. I thought a car like, you know, Honda or something I will get. But then there was a Land Cruiser parked. I was not used to driving a truck like that.
Yeah.
It was huge for me at the time. And then we met some interesting people there again.
Didn't you have a neighbor that was doing research on chimpanzees?
Oh, that was later on. So then we went to another place which is closer to the beach. It's called Mikocheni. And then there we also came across this person who was doing the research on chimpanzees and all that. Jane Goodall is her name.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A famous chimpanzee researcher.
Wow.
So we even met her physically. And Rekha was a small girl, 1 year old at the time. She also came with us to see her and everything. It was very interesting. And, you know, it was a different experience in the sense that whenever we want, we can go to the beach, spend some time in the evenings and all that. And we are used to eating cassava, you know, the roasted cassava on the roadside. And this girl used to give us a lot of good time. And I had a lot of foreign visitors at that time from Italy, UK and US and all those.
Okay.
You know, they were our customers. So we would go out, you know, some faraway place like Bahamas. There's some beach area and all that for dinner and other things. So this girl used to accompany us. She was so cute.
Yeah.
So she used to be on my lap all the time.
Yeah.
So we had a nice, good time there. Yeah. It was very nice.
Yeah, how long did you stay in Tanzania then?
Tanzania, we only stayed there for about 4 years.
And again, moving out of Tanzania, was it a similar story of looking for the next adventure and the next kind of interesting and unique opportunity?
Exactly. Yeah. I never went for these adventures, but they just came on my way.
Yeah.
Again, the same thing. At around fourth year or so, I got an offer again. Somebody said, are you willing to go to Zambia? We want to open a business. Why don't you go there and start it for us and so on? I said, okay, fine.
Yeah. What were the considerations moving to Zambia now that you have a wife and a kid who's started growing up in one place and started associating home with one place? Were there any thoughts of uprooting her from her home to a new place?
Good question. What happens was, you know, due to the climatic condition, Raksha was getting sick, like cold and cough.
Okay.
She used to get it frequently. And then we used to go to a doctor called Dr. Shivji those days. That man was only giving her antibiotics. We were not knowing anything about what to give when a child is sick. We just take her immediately. When the moment she sneezes, we take her to the doctor. They will immediately prescribe some antibiotics. So she has been loaded with antibiotics. It was not a right thing to do if I were to know how to bring up a child, which I learned a bit later, but that was a bit too late. Okay, that is one. So we were thinking that she was getting cold and cough in this place, and you know, because of the beach and other things, and it is very hot. And I heard from people that Zambia is a better place. It is not that hot. And it's, you also get winter. I said, hey, in Africa, there's winter also.
Yeah.
So I was surprised. So I said, okay, that is another consideration. I said, no, let's go to a better place.
Living in Zambia would have been different than Dar es Salaam, because you did mention that in Dar es Salaam there was a lot of Indians. So I'm assuming there was a lot of Indian stores and life was pretty similar to what you could have expected living in India. But how is it in Zambia now?
There is some contrast when you compare these two countries. No country is the same as the other. In Zambia, we don't have that many stores where you get Indian stuff and things like that, because we are Indians and we always look for some Indian stuff and so on. We don't get that easily those days, at least. Nowadays, it has changed. There is a lot of restaurants, Indian restaurants are there, and a lot of stores, groceries and other things are locally available. But those days, basically, in at least Dar es Salaam, you know, we like how we buy vegetable on the street in India, we can buy that in Dar es Salaam. And also, there were a lot of temples and a lot of Indians. So that was a different story. But when we came to Zambia, it was not like that. So there, people were selling the groceries in their houses. So we need to go buy from there and so on. And then there were a lot of restrictions in the sense that the food was not available, like restaurants were not there. Only, you know, Western restaurants were there and so on. So most of the things we have to cook at home and eat. Unless your wife is or the spouse is not good in cooking, then it means that you have to sacrifice a lot. In terms of food, you'll be starving.
You clearly didn't have to do that.
I didn't have to do it because my wife was an excellent cook. And eventually, because, you know, she has been doing the community cooking for a long time, she can even do the cooking for a wedding on her own now if you give her an opportunity. That much proficient.
All the aunties, a lot of the aunties in Zambia, I think, have perfected the art of mass-scale cooking. Yeah. So, Uncle, in Zambia, then is when your next two kids also come along, and you know you're raising your kids in Zambia. Was there a sense of them being away from your parents and them growing up away from their grandparents and you know the rest of the family in India? Was there that kind of pressure that you ever felt at some point?
You know, we need to be honest in this, that we missed our life in India. We have to sacrifice a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it is after the birth of the other two kids. Okay, when Raksha was alone, it was all fun, you know, because she was just playing and all these things. And she had no, what you call, responsibilities or certain commitments and things like that, because it's only one child. And bringing her up was easy. And for her also, it was fun, you know. The school was easy. And for us, it was a different experience. You know, what happened was, it was Raksha was alone and she said, no, I need a sibling and things like that. So that's why, you know, she had her siblings after about 8 years.
Yeah.
At one particular point of time, okay, in my own career, I'll have to be honest, after the kids were born, the twins, I had my own challenge. You know, when I moved my job, this job also had its own challenges, where I'm working now, 21 years back, if I go back in my memory lane. It was a very difficult job in the sense, at that time, the company was not doing well when I took over economically. And I said, I discussed with my family, like my wife, father of the family. So I discussed with her. I told her, look, under the circumstances, I don't think it is a wise decision for us to stay here for too long, assuming that this company will do well. And there was a lot of economic challenges, you know, getting salary on time. This, that was a big, big, big problem. So I had a chat with my wife. I told her, look, this is the situation and I am resolving it like this. I didn't ask for her opinion. I just said, this is my decision. We will give each other 2 years. You guys go to India. Now Raksha is in the final stage of the school. She's like eighth or ninth grade or something. And if you go after 2 years later, then two, 3 years later, then in India, you know, they don't give you admission in the professional courses if you have not done 4 years of continuous studies in India. That was a rule, like, you know. Mm. So she was in the grade seven or something like that. So then I said, look, this is a problem. If we don't do this at this time, and then if we go to India after 2 years, for example, we pack up and go, then she will be having her own challenges to continue the studies. So you guys pack and go for 2 years. If the company turns around, you are coming back. If the company goes belly up, I'm coming back. So I'm giving myself 2 years time.
That's an interesting perspective you bring, because the perspective they told us at that time is, we want to culturally enhance you and we want you to learn music and dance, and going to India will be the good thing for you.
Ultimate, yeah.
Yeah, but we didn't know that all the struggles that you and Amma faced at that time. So it's an interesting perspective to hear it now, many, many years later.
Yeah, because, you know, at that time, you know, we cannot tell you this thing, it'll scare you.
Right.
And, you know, for a child to have this kind of feeling, it'll be a mental worry. And it's not a good thing to share such problems at that age.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I tell you, you'll understand. But at that time, you may not even have understood, number one. Number two, then you'll have unnecessary worries and you'll imagine other things which are not there.
True. Very true.
Yeah.
Right. So then eventually, I'm guessing after those 2 years, auntie and the kids came back to Zambia because financially better situation. I'm sure that must have been a relief for you, in a sense of, you know, not completely failing at the task or the challenge that was at hand, but also at the same time giving your kids an opportunity to have some sense of stability and educational kind of options in case things went bad. How did you feel finally being reunited with auntie and the kids after those 2 years?
No, it was a very welcome change.
Yeah.
In any case, you know, we would have united, whether that was in Zambia or in India. That was the plan originally. So it just happened like they could come back to Zambia because we were able to turn around the company. And it was a very, very nice change.
Yeah.
And also, if you look at it, these kids also had a kind of a roots. They also learned something, our tradition and other things, which if they have grew up in our place, would have not got the opportunity to, you know, get some of the feelings and, you know, how the life in India and things like that.
Yeah.
So they had the best of both worlds. Other words.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine having a diversity of experiences and living in different cultures and having to adjust would have a positive lasting impact. So after everybody comes back home, Raksha and the kids are now all grown up. They're all adults. You and auntie are back again to a huge house with just the two of you and possibly a few dogs. how has that transition been of the kids now leaving home and you're back to the two of you?
It's a very good question anyway. So, but to put it across nicely, I will say that it's a very painful situation to be alone without the kids. They're so used to them and the way they used to argue, talk and things like that. You know, in our times, we never know so many things. And when a parent says something, it's like golden words. No questions asked. No, what do you call it? There is no note to that.
Yeah.
We will accept it as if it is the final thing and that is the right thing. But in our experience with our kids, it was a different experience because they had their own way of knowing things and they were able to articulate and say what I'm saying is not right sometimes. And I have to take it with a pinch of salt. And eventually I learn also that what I believed was right was not right.
So conversations like that, it sounds like, you know, as a parent, when you're used to your kids being around you and when they need advice or when, you know, the way you bond is by spending time with them, right? When you send your kids off to college and they're in a completely different place, did you feel like you had to rebuild some of these communication skills that you have to kind of rely a bit more heavily on to kind of continue having a relationship with them? Because you can't just, you know, chit chat for 15 minutes on the way to school. You know, you can't just, you know, go out for lunch or go out for dinner and just, you know, spend some time with them. You kind of have to pick up the phone and have a prolonged conversation. Did you feel like you had to kind of retool yourself as a parent to better communicate with your kids? And in conversations like you've just described, in terms of giving advice or even just, you know, spending time with them, did you feel like you had to change how you had to parent now that your kids are away from you?
Of course, it goes without saying. Whatever you told now is what I'm going through right now.
Yeah.
And it is a very difficult phase in our life. You know, we are not used to it.
Yeah.
Like living with the kids for about 20-25 years and suddenly you let them go. The house becomes empty and you are talking to the wall. What are you doing? And there is nobody to shout at. There is nobody to discuss. There is nobody to whatever, you know. I mean, it becomes a very difficult and boring life, you know, altogether.
So, Uncle, now that you've been living in Africa for about 20 plus years, would you stay here forever? Do you ever have thoughts about moving back to India? Or do you feel like for the near to midterm future, you're kind of set in Zambia?
Yeah, that's a very good question. What I'm thinking of doing is to continue staying in Zambia. Yeah, because it is a very peaceful place. And then we always compare, you know, when we want to move back, it is basically Madras, not any other place. So comparing to Madras, this is a much better place. And we find it very convenient and comfortable living here than going back, you know. So I don't know how we will fit into that other system. That's also another worry. So even when we go to India, you know, for a visit, after every 3 weeks or so, we want to get back. You know, we feel we are missing home. This is our home, basically.
Just thinking about your whole story looking back, having moved to different places, settling down in different places, and uprooting again and moving. Do you ever think about what your sacrifices were along the way?
You know, we cannot be there for all important occasions. With regard to my parents also, we cannot be there for all their wedding anniversaries or birthdays. So these are the things which you have to, you know, because of this long distance, you can't make it so often. Also, when I look back again, like, you know, the children, the birth, I couldn't be physically present. You know, in those days, we didn't have the confidence to have the deliveries done in Zambia because we were not very sure. And also the emotional part. For auntie, you know, she would have been better off with her mother around. And her mother cannot travel. She didn't want to travel. So when that happens, then you need to send her there, you know. So what if any complications during the birth or anything like that? I don't know how to handle it either. So I was also very young and I was worried.
Yeah.
So a lot of sacrifices in terms of such things, important days and things like that. Yes, it has to happen because of our staying so very far. Physically, we miss a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah. With that, I just want to say thank you for taking the time to sit down and have a really honest and vulnerable conversation with us about your story. I think it's going to be really relatable to a lot of people who listen in to the show.
No, thank you so much for this opportunity to make me think, because I was also not thinking. I had no breaks, just going on and on, you know. So I had to put a break and think. So it's also a two-way street. Huh? Your questions also provoked me to think back and reflect what I was doing all these days. So at least it gave me an opportunity. At least I will have something to start afresh again now, where my journey has to be. Thanks for the questions, and you provoke my thoughts. Great opportunity.
Thank you, Appa. Really learned a lot from talking to you. Not that I've not heard it before, but I heard it more in depth now. So I really appreciate you being vulnerable and honest. Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you were able to take away something from our conversation. Please follow us on our Facebook and Instagram at Two Suitcases Pod. Feel free to leave feedback, ask questions, or even suggest topics for future episodes. Look out for the next episode on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcast. Thanks for unpacking with us!